We now move to the next part of the program, and I'm going to ask any directors who are on stage who are not also the chair of an SO or AC to make way for an hour and to invite chairs of SOs, ACs and nominating committee and the Ombudsman, in fact all of the people who are giving reports over the next hour, to come and find a microphone and a seat on the stage.
Thank you.
And we're going to do this reasonably alphabetically, so we're going to begin with the ALAC and then go to the ASO and the CCNSO.
Masochists on the board who stays.
As Bruce said, there is power up here and water.
This is state.
Thank you, board members, for making that transition easy, and thank you, AC and SO chairs, for taking the stage. We begin with the At-Large Advisory Committee, and I call on Cheryl Langdon-Orr, the chair of that group, to give the report. Cheryl.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and thank you all for being out so early, if not bright, after a very, very long week. The report from the At-Large Advisory Committee, but more importantly, the At-Large Community that I present to you today is already lodged on the meeting website and will be also on our At-Large website. It's a lengthy document. It has lots of information, and I would encourage it as worthwhile reading. And I'll be giving Peter a hard copy, along with the copy of our slides for today. We'll also be reading to the record and giving hard copy of these wonderful regional pamphlets, which have been produced since the Nairobi meeting in multiple languages. These are outreach materials to assist us in our work in each of the five geographic regions in ICANN. At this meeting, we've had 26 members from all five of the at-large regions attending. They range from, of course, the 15 members of the ALAC through to at-large structures, which is the edges where all the work really needs to happen, attending our 13 formal meetings and 2 cross-constituency meetings. Now, this is just the formal meetings that we've been to. The at-large has also been in just about every other room that didn't lock them out during the whole week's proceedings, and we've been engaged in our, in inverted commas, normal work group activities with GNSO work groups ranging from vertical integration through to the high security work team. Too many buttons and not enough hands. The slide 2 brings me to the RAA and compliance issues. And at our meetings, and you'll find statements in our report to this effect, we remain strongly supportive that ICANN's compliance activities is strengthened and properly resourced. It is a matter of essential importance for trust at the consumer and end user end that we have strong and effective compliance. Thank you so much, Louis. That's what I needed, a technician. And that we are very, very keen to work as we have been discussing closer with the registrars. We had a very productive joint meeting here, Mr. Chairman, with quite literally a room full, and we look forward to further cooperation and exploring mutualities in the future. My next slide takes me to a great deal of pleasure, and that is to report some work since Nairobi and the Board's Resolution 20, which called for the formation of the joint ALAC and GNSO Working Group on exploration of options for an assistance model for those who might require it in new GTLDs. And at this meeting, we again had a chock-a-block room full of the African community. This is the AFRALO, regional leaders and at-large structural members, and the AFRI-ICAN group. And they have produced a very significant and well-thought-out statement, which is being inputted into the work group at exactly the right time. So as the work group is calling for input, the cross-community work has been done and it's coming directly into the work group. I believe Katim has also requested that he's asked Tijani, one of the leaders from AFRALO, to pass it directly onto the board. What needs to be said from the at-large advisory committee point of view on this is that the words in this statement, while tailored to Africans' needs, would be echoed from most of the other regions when they look at their needs for this particular issue. Moving on to the very important matters of our at-large improvements implementation. To assist with the visualisation of our improvements implementation, we've grouped what we need to do, and there's a number of tasks, 13 recommendations, but many subtasks to make that happen. And you heard from the report of the Structural Improvements Committee how part of that planning is going. But you don't all want to read the 64-page report, so here it is in five pretty colours. We have grouped them into matters of ALAC's continuing purpose, the matter, very important matter between now and Cartagena, of the at-large selected director, ALS, at-large structure, participation, ALAC's planning processes, and our policy advice. To give you just a brief rundown on where we are with all of the 13 recommendations of the at-large improvements, here is a brief chart showing us heading up towards the 75% mark on a couple of our particular key items, but we believe we are on track and looking forward to getting much further between now and December in all of these implementation plans. It then brings me to the most important thing, which is the end of the slide deck, but the moment of thanks to the huge commitment that our staff and our regional leaders and those members out in the at-large structures are making. The hundreds of hours they're contributing into policy development in work groups, not within the at-large advisory committee or the world of at-large, but in other parts of ICAN. It's hats off to each and every one of them, and it is those voices that you hear when you get a ALAC piece of advice. It's coming out from the edges, it's getting woven into a view or a diversity of views, and it's coming through. I do need to mention a bit of leadership change amongst all of the other meetings that our members have been doing here this last week. We've managed to have both URALO and APRALO have their normal monthly meeting. And in the Asia Pacific regional normal monthly meeting, it's my pleasure to report to you, Mr. Chairman, that with our Vice Chair elected intersessionally between Nairobi and now, Fayyud Bajwa is our Vice Chair of Asia Pacific Regional, a large organisation from Pakistan, and Professor Hong Shui at our meeting has been appointed as the current chair of Asia Pacific Regional at large organisation. We will be pulling a call for elections of a second vice chair shortly after this meeting closes, and we would like to note for the record our respect and our good wishes to both Kia Therana, acting as our chair, and to Les Allinson as one of our vice chairs, who through personal and medical circumstances have had to suddenly leave us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Cheryl, for that report on the activities of the at-large and the ALAC. Are there any questions from the board? Bruce.
Thank you, Peter. Cheryl, on your first slide, you mentioned that there were not enough resources being put into compliance. Can you just elaborate on how that's assessed? Is that assessed in that there's a focus on who is accuracy, and because there's inaccuracies in who is, there's a compliance problem? Or Is that assessed on the basis that you think that a compliance complaint's been made and the staff haven't acted on it? I just want to kind of get a source for that conclusion.
Certainly. Thank you for the question, Bruce. In fact, it is not limited to those issues at all. It's very particularly coming out of the work groups. We're talking to David Geezer and the compliance. We meet with him regularly. And we hear an ability, both in staffing resources and in ability to focus on things where he can follow down on, for example, financial issues of compliance, but perhaps not so readily on things that matter to our consumers as well. So we would like to ensure that compliance has everything it needs in terms of manpower and effective tools to assure us that we're in a trusted environment. Yeah, it's certainly not suggesting that it's just matters of only who is or...
Right. So there is you made two comments there. You said staff and effective tools. I mean, one of the things that's not apparent to the board, and this was discussed yesterday following the public forum, is, you know, we heard a number of people raising issues around compliance, and we did actually ask some of the senior management on what resources they need, because it hasn't been clear. I certainly haven't seen a proposal come from the staff to the board saying, hey, we don't have enough compliance staff, can we double the budget? So it's not as though the board's saying no. It's a case of saying, what specifically are we talking about? What resources do we need to solve what problem? But some of the tools, they're not necessarily tools within control of the staff. Some of the tools are actually policy tools that need to be created by the community. So the compliance program at the moment, just so you understand, it's basically, and I'll just take the WHOIS particular example, there may be others, but taking the WHOIS example, the system as it's constructed today is that the registrant warrants that the information they provide is correct. And if a member of the community finds that that's not correct, they report that problem to a registrar and the registrar takes action. So certainly there can be compliance if registrars are not responding to these reports, and I hope that that compliance is happening. But the other side of it is actually compliance at the registrant level, and at what stage should that be done? You know, do we have systems that check that, and then we contact the registrant and ask them to fix it? So whose responsibility is that? And a lot of that discussion and decision is actually a policy decision. And once that policy decision is made, then we can resource the staff function to ensure that policy is being applied. So I just want to separate those issues. It's not about, you know, one of the questions we asked yesterday, if we added another couple of million dollars to the staff budget in the compliance team, would we appreciably make a difference on the issues people are complaining about? And the answer was no.
In other words, we're going to have to get up out of the weeds of the detail of compliance, I'm afraid. Are there any... Thank you, Bruce. It's useful, and I hope we can carry on having that conversation in the forum, the policy development discussions. Are there any other questions of Cheryl about the at-large report? If not, thank you, Cheryl. Can I ask that you hand the controls to Louis, and I call on Louis Lee, the chair of the ASO, to give that group's report. Welcome, Louis.
Thank you, Peter. Members of the board, chairs of the SOs, ACs, and members of the community. This is the ASO report. I'm Louis Lee, chair of the ASO Address Council. I'd like to note that much of this material in this report was already provided to the GAC earlier this week. So IPv4 status. The IPv4 runout, we have exactly 16 IPv4/8 allocation blocks remaining at the IANA. So the studies are showing that we estimate the runout to be in August 2011, somewhere between then and April 2012. That's approximately 14 to 22 months. We are seeing that there's an increased consumption rate in Asia-Pacific region, which is not surprising. The growth is there in Asia-Pacific to justify that. And for IPv6, we are also seeing an increase in adoption rate. That's good news. We are receiving the regular updates on vendor support at our regular meetings, because this topic is up there for everyone. But the bad news is that the adoption rate right now is not fast enough to eliminate last-minute adoption. There will be small amount of rush. This will be mostly in the form of people asking for V4 address space, and they will understand that they will be receiving V6 space when they go to the RIRs, and there is no V4 left to be given them. The activities of the internet, regional internet registries. The five regional internet registries are engaged in outreach at all the regular meetings. At the ITU IPv6 group meeting in March, a decision was made by the ITU to research the rumored problems in IP number allocations before jumping into conclusions and designing solutions that lack a problem. The RIRs are succeeding in very closely liaising with the law enforcement community, with the main focus on outreach and managing expectations. The RIRs are working with ICANN and the IANA to sign the in-adder route, and they are working amongst each other to roll out the initial RPKI service in 2011. The RIRs are always on the lookout for developments that touch upon RIR responsibilities, ready to reach out, educate, and defend bottom-up industry self-regulation. Activities of the ASO Address Council. Recently, the ASO Address Council appointed Kuei Wu to the ICANN Board of Directors. We are monitoring three global policy proposals concerning autonomous system numbers, i.e. the ASNs, allocations from the INA to the RIRs, and the return and redistribution of IPv4 addresses. The ACU is identifying ways to increase communication and interaction with the other parts of the ICANN community. And thank you all.
Thank you, Louis. Any questions for Louis about the report of the ASO? Seeing none, then I say good morning to Chris Despain, who's the chair of the Country Code Support Names Organisation, and ask Chris for a report from that group. Chris.
Right. That's clever, isn't it? This is technology at work. There you go. Good morning. Sorry about that. Small microphone issue. I don't have slides. As usual, we'll file our written document at all the necessary places. I'll be brief. We've had an incredibly busy meeting. It's actually the first time that the CCNSO has not been able to complete all of its stuff in 2 days. We had to start on Monday afternoon with a session on IDNs so that we could get everything done. On the operational planning and budget, we talked a lot about that. We've filed some questions and comments. We have set up a working group to start negotiations with ICANN in respect to financial contributions. There are two legs to that. One is to talk about the quantum, and the other is to talk about a methodology for payment. It would be unfair of me to suggest that we're close to any sort of agreement. We're not. We're a fair way apart. But we are, one, getting fantastic information, which is great, and that helps us enormously. And two, we are willing to do the work to see if we can reach some sort of an agreement. I announced at the public forum yesterday the drafting group, cross-ICANN constituency drafting group for the Security and Stability Analysis Working Group. That's not necessarily going to be the name of it, but it fits for now. We had a very lively and interesting meeting with the CCNSO review team. The review document was presented to us and discussed. We'll obviously be formally responding to it, and we're going to request the working group to extend the public comment period until the 15th of September, because we think it's important that the CCNSO as a group, as an SO, responds rather than just having individual comments from members, although there will be those as well, no doubt. On the IDN CCTLD policy development process. Substantial progress has been made there by the working group in the community. We're adopting the IDNA BIS definition of what is an IDN-TLD. And we are starting to do some work, or we will be starting to do some work, looking into variant management issues, which, of course, is critically important. Just a mention of the country names in the GTLD space. CCNSO welcomes the change in position regarding the applying for country names under the new GTLD process, as expressed in DAG version 4. So thank you all for that. On delegation and redelegation, the working group has published a large document. It's 110 pages long. It's an analysis of the board decisions in respect to delegations and redelegations. It's a really, really interesting document. I commend it to you all to read. It's worth reading.
Chris, sorry to interrupt. I'm just ask you to hold for a moment. We seem to have lost scribing.
I'm sorry, I wasn't.
And I'm not sure whether that's a problem.
Okay, no worries.
For remote participants.
I can see a mouse moving on the screen there, so something's happening.
Ah.
No, it's
back. Sounds like we're back.
It seems so. Yeah.
Okay, carry on. Thanks, Chris.
So I'll just rewind slightly to delegation and redelegation. The working group has published an analysis of the of delegations and redelegations in CCTLD world, and I would commend the document to all of you to read. It is a crucial research document for our work, but I also think that it's a valuable document for everybody to see how the process works. A few other things. We held a strategic planning session to look at what the CCTLD think ICANN should be looking at strategically over the next 3 to 5 years. We've got more work to do there, of course, but it was a very interesting session, and we'll be carrying on with that so that we can contribute more effectively to the strategic planning process. We met with law enforcement and talked about trying to satisfy the things that they would like to have, whilst at the same time maintaining the territorial boundaries. Finally, I'd just like to thank URID for the organisation and for being the sponsors of our CCNSO dinner. And I'd like to also, on behalf of the CCNSO, welcome Heather as the new chair of the GAC. We look forward very much to working closely with you. And that's it.
Thank you, Chris. Any questions for Chris about the report from the CCNSO? Obviously a very full program. Seeing none, I join Chris in welcoming Heather Dryden, who's the interim GAC chair, as I understand the process, with the resignation and the farewell yesterday of Yanis. The GAC appoints someone to fill the remaining term, and Heather has been appointed. Heather, welcome to that process. We look forward to working with you as well, and we look forward to the reading of the GAC communique. Thank you.
Is it working? Okay. Thank you, Chairman. I appreciate the warm welcome that I've received this week. Today is my first day in this role, so I'm going to ease into things by reading the communique. So here goes. As an introduction, the Governmental Advisory Committee of the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers met in Brussels during June 19th to 23rd, 2010. 60 members and 4 observers participated in the meeting. The Governmental Advisory Committee expresses gratitude to URID for hosting the meeting in Brussels and thanks ICANN for supporting the GAC meeting. The Board GAC Joint Working Group on the Review of the Role of the GAC at ICANN also met. So, the JWG met in Brussels, and the discussion focused on 2 main issues for the JWG report: GAC advice to the Board and the role of GAC liaisons. Regarding GAC advice to the Board, in the view of the JWG, any explicit advice in any written form constitutes the advice foreseen in the bylaws. The GAC also advises on the effectiveness of procedures for facilitating interactions between ICANN constituencies for the development of policy. In addition, the GAC first seeks consensus in its work, and this can take time to achieve. If consensus is not possible, a range of views can be provided as advice. The bylaws provide only for GAC advice to be given to the board and do not include provisions for the other SOs and ACs to formally consider GAC advice. Several recommendations are identified, including the creation of a transparent register to record when GAC advice has been provided and to track whether, when, how the board has taken into account or responded to particular advice from the GAC. The JWG aims to finalize the report in Colombia, and further JWG discussion is anticipated on ways that the bylaws could formally acknowledge methods for the ICANN constituencies, including the GAC, to provide inputs to the policy development process at an early stage and as the process develops. Regarding new GTLDs, including morality and public order issues, the GAC was grateful to receive a briefing update from ICANN staff on the changes incorporated in version 4 of the draft applicant guidebook. The GAC wishes to acknowledge the dedicated work of the ICANN staff in addressing the issues of concern for the GAC. The GAC will provide a full response to DAG 4, including issues related to morality and public order, in accordance with the timeline for the public consultation. The GAC expects to receive a response to its letter to the board in relation to the DAG 3. The GAC believes that the new GTLD process should meet the global public interest consistent with the affirmation of commitments. It therefore urges ICANN to set technical and other requirements, including cost considerations, at a reasonable and proportionate level in order not to exclude developing country stakeholders from participating in the new GTLD process. Key documents should be available in all UN languages. The GAC urges that the communications and outreach strategy for the new GTLD round be developed with this issue of inclusiveness as a key priority. The GAC appreciates the exchange of views on these issues with the GNSO. The GAC also met with the CCNSO. The GAC and the CCNSO held a constructive exchange regarding the scope and work to date of the CCNSO delegation, redelegation, and retirement working group, based on a presentation of the working group's progress report and initial assessment. The GAC welcomed the CCNSO's invitation to provide comments on the text and looks forward to further discussions during the annual meeting in December 2010. Other issues addressed during the exchange included an update from CCTLDs and GAC members on pending IDN CCTLD applications under the fast-track process, the treatment of geographic names and the treatment of geographic names in new GTLDs. Moreover, the GAC supports the CCNSO's decision to work jointly with the GNSO, ESSAC, and ALAC to draft a charter for a potential cross-constituency working group to consider further ICANN's proposals regarding the security and stability of the DNS. The GAC notes that these issues are of significant public policy interests and indicates its willingness to collaborate with other parts of the ICANN community on this important issue. Concerning law enforcement due diligence recommendations, an absolute majority of GAC members made the following statement. The GAC encourages the board, the RAA working group, and registrars to work with law enforcement agencies to address their concerns and implement the necessary changes without delay. Following from the GAC's Nairobi communique, the GAC requests an update of progress on consideration of these proposals, including the board's consideration of the due diligence recommendations. Based on the deliberations in Brussels and the previous meetings, the GAC endorses the proposals from law enforcement agencies to address criminal misuse of the DNS, noting that implementation of these proposals must respect applicable law and respect all requirements concerning the processing of personal data, such as privacy, accuracy, and relevance. Some countries felt that further efforts needed to be deployed in order to clarify these proposals.
We also had a meeting with the Accountability and Transparency Review Team. The GAC met with the ANTRT to discuss a number of questions relating to the accountability and transparency of GAC interactions with ICANN. Much of the discussion covered the same areas as those coming out of the work of the JWG on the review of the role of the GAC, including the nature and treatment of GAC advice provided to the board and the need for early engagement in PDP activity with the ICANN constituencies. The GAC will work intersessionally to provide a written response to the ANTRT questions. The GAC also met with the NRO. The GAC welcomed the briefing from the NRO with updates on IP address space management and the depletion of the IPv4 address space. The estimated depletion date for IPv4 addresses was August 2011, and the RIR estimated depletion date April 2012, based on the current allocation rate. The GAC and NRO highlighted the need and importance of cooperation between the RIRs and governments for promoting deployment of IPv6 and for addressing the allocation needs for IPv6 address space throughout the world. In terms of GAC Secretariat support, the GAC discussed a refined proposal to ensure appropriate Secretariat support for the GAC along the lines of a hybrid model, in other words, funded by governments with continued support from ICANN. The GAC accepted the offer from Brazil, Norway, and the Netherlands to finance and host a secretariat for the duration of 5 years. The donor countries have the intention to put in place a lean and flexible secretariat, providing professional and proactive support to the membership. They propose to evaluate the secretariat after 3 years in order to explore ways forward after the 5-year financial support currently guaranteed. These countries will start the necessary arrangements and have this secretariat operational at the latest from the 41st ICANN GAC meeting in June 2011, allowing a transition from the current secretariat provided by India. In terms of the election of GAC officers, Mr. Yanis Karklins resigned from his post of GAC chair following his departure from the Latvian government. This resignation is effective on the 24th of June 2010. Following provisions of the Article 9 of the GAC Operating Principles, the GAC appointed Ms. Heather Dryden from Canada to serve as an interim chair and a non-voting GAC liaison to the board for the remainder of the current chair's term, which ends at the end of the first GAC meeting of 2011. This appointment is effective from the 25th of June 2010. The GAC launched the process of nominations for the post of the chair and 3 vice chairs. Election of new officers will take place during the Cartagena meeting of the GAC. Members of the GAC welcomed Ms. Heather Dryden and expressed their gratitude to the outgoing chair, Mr. Yanis Karklins, for his service to the GAC. In terms of the GAC operating principles, the GAC created an ad hoc working group that will review the GAC operating principles. The working group's proposals will be examined during the Cartagena meeting of the GAC. The GAC also noted the declaration of the Committee of Ministers of the Council of Europe adopted on the 26th of May 2010 on enhanced participation of its member states in internet governance matters and welcomed the Council of Europe as an observer to the GAC. The GAC warmly thanks all those among the ICANN community who have contributed to the dialogue with the GAC in Brussels. The next GAC meeting will take place during the period of the ICANN meeting in Cartagena, Colombia. Thank you.
Thank you, Heather. Are there any questions of the interim chair of the GAC in relation to the communique? I see Ray Polzak at the microphone. Ray.
Thank you, Peter. Speaking in my capacity as the co-chair of the board GAC working group, first of all, I'd like to express gratitude on behalf of the board members for all the work of my co-chair, Heather. She's done an admirable job, and thank you very much. I would also like to provide emphasis that the board members of the working group consider it particularly important that the role of the liaisons is, in our mind, very, very important, not only the liaison to the chair, which most board members are very, very familiar with, but also those liaisons to the NOMCOM and the rather inactive, at the moment, liaisons to the various supporting organizations and advisory committees. We see a rejuvenation of those efforts to actually help facilitate the participation of the GAC in the early stages of the policy development process so that their advice can be taken early and work itself into the policy process as it progresses. Thank you.
Thank you, Ray. Rob Hogarth, any questions online? I hear. Was that a no, Rob?
That's correct.
Yes, no.
Thank you. Thank you, Heather. So after the G of the GAC, we come to the G of the GNSO, and I say good morning to Chuck Gomes, the chairman of the council of that group, and ask Chuck to give the report from the GNSO. Chuck.
Good morning to everyone. See if I can figure out where to point the... there we go. Okay. I'm not going to try and summarize all the work that's gone on since Nairobi, but... it's pretty much been nonstop in the GNSO with contributions from hundreds of people within the GNSO community and with other ICANN communities because all of our work is open to anyone who's willing to volunteer and contribute. We had a very busy week. We had 8 sessions on Saturday, including a joint meeting with the Government Advisory Committee. We had 12 sessions on Sunday, and that included a joint meeting with the board and staff. On Monday, we met jointly with the CCNSO. Tuesday is, of course, the Constituency and Stakeholder Day, where our constituencies and stakeholder groups met all day, some of them jointly in various sessions with House meetings and joint constituency meetings, et cetera. On Wednesday, we had a 4.5-hour plus public GNSO Council meeting and had a follow-up meeting on that on Thursday. And mixed in with all that were a bunch of working group sessions and other sessions to get public input on the various projects that we're working on. Some of the accomplishments this week, the council completed a prioritization exercise where we prioritized 14 active projects that are going on right now. We also... approve the our procedures for endorsing candidates for the affirmation of commitments review teams going forward. We started the discussion of who is studies we will initiate in fiscal year 2011. We approved GNSO improvements, communications, and coordination work team recommendations that particularly relate to GNSO website improvements and recommendations and guidelines for communication with other ICANN organizations. So those are now ready for implementation. And we opened up a public comment period on some additional GNSO improvement operations procedures changes that will be implemented and acted on by the council after the public comment period. In addition, we opened up a comment period at the same time for discussion on recommendations for constituency and stakeholder group operating procedures. Some of the ongoing progress with regard to GNSO improvements, let me just generally say that we're probably within, pretty close to within 3 months or so of finishing all of the recommendations for the GNSO improvements. The working group model implementation recommendations just had a comment period, and so those are very close to final depending on the comments. The policy development process recommendations, or PDP recommendations as most of us call it, have a preliminary report that's out for public comment right now, and are making good progress. The final GNSO operating procedures, just a few more elements of that, are very close to completion. And then the stakeholder group and constituency operating procedures work team has just one more task to finish in their efforts. As far as working group progress, the registration abuse policies has a report out, and there was a session on that this week for public input. The inter-registrar transfer policy, Part B, that's the second of a series of five PDPs, is making very good progress. They will be initiating a public comment period in the next few days. The post-expiration domain name renewal PDP, also is getting feedback on some of their possible recommendations. And, of course, everyone knows, I think, that the vertical integration PDP working group met at least four times this week and continue to strive to accomplish what the board tasked it with in Nairobi. Couple other things done this week. We entertained a request from the CCNSO, as Chris mentioned, to form a drafting team to look at a possible charter for the creation of an SSR working group that would be open to the community, not restricted to the CCNSO and the GNSO. It's just that the two SOs, along with the ALAC and the ESAC, has also expressed support for that. So you'll hear more about that in the coming weeks and months. And then we approved a motion to allow live audio-only access to GNSO council meetings. I want to especially thank all of the participants in the GNSO and other community members that have been a part of all the work that has gone on, because it's been a tremendous amount of work, and it can't happen with all of the hundreds, literally, of volunteers that have contributed to that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jack. Again, very busy time for the GNSO. Any questions for Chuck on the report from the GNSO? Thank you, Chuck. We'll move on then to the next report, which comes from the RSAC, the Root Server Advisory Committee, and I'll call on Suzanne Wolfe to give that report. Suzanne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I actually thought I was not quite next, but let me just set this here. Technology is a wonderful blessing when it works. As we wind to the close of yet another ICANN meeting, I'll take a few minutes, I will be brief, on the current work of the Root Server System Advisory Committee. First, as most of you know, RSAC is one of the original ICANN advisory committees, formed to offer advice to ICANN on the various aspects of coordination and shared concerns among Root Server operators, the activities of IANA, as touches on the Root Server System and the Root Zone, and the potential impacts of various other ICANN undertakings as may be requested. The committee meetings tend to be co-located with IETF, which is the most natural arrangement given its membership and the types of consultations with colleagues it generally needs to do, although there are always a few of us at ICANN meetings. You can see us in the halls. The most recent meeting was Anaheim on March 21st. The next will be in Maastricht on July 18th. The first major item we've been working on has been the DNSSEC rollout for the Root. There's been a great deal of discussion about that this week, so I'm not going to go into a whole lot of time on it. But RSAC members have been part of the extensive consultations around this effort for a long time now. And, of course, the Root Server Operator members of RSAC have been an integral part of the deployment. I do want to say thanks to the ICANN, VeriSign, and NTIA team that have been managing the Root DNSSEC rollout. They've been terrific to work with. There's been lots of reporting on progress, some very open discussion around some of the issues involved in making the rollout a success. And on a personal, kind of a personal note, I'll add that many of the RSAC members have been part of the design and implementation of DNSSEC from the very beginning. Some of my colleagues have been working on DNSSEC for a decade. So, you know, they're among the people that worked on the specification, worked on the technology in the IETF, worked in their own software and operations environments, you know, created and tested the technology so that when people realized they needed it, it would be there for them. So there's been a lot of satisfaction in watching the signing of the Root actually happen. Not all of us were sure it ever would. In fact, I think I want to bet, or I will on July 15th, as the Root DNSSEC rollout reaches a conclusion, the main open item on our plate is the advice requested by the board in regards to root zone scaling considerations. This has sometimes been, I would say, mischaracterized a little bit as RSAC and our colleagues with SAC, I believe Rom will be speaking to this, being asked to tell ICANN how many new TLDs are okay or how big the root zone can be, which is not what we were asked and not what we intend to provide. What we are working on is some high-level recommendations, including advice on what primary data IANA and the root server operator should provide to each other in order to collaborate on supporting the overall health of the system as the root zone grows. The aim is not to give detailed specific advice now, but to help ICANN and the other parties responsible for the system with guidance on how to make sure it has continuing access to such advice in a new world with a root zone that is DNSSEC signed and has new TLDs in it, perhaps quite a few. The effort to get advice based on the scaling report, on the scaling study and further discussion is behind schedule. We're disappointed about that, but we hope to get back on track in the near term. As the other outstanding issues for new GTLD rollout work towards conclusion, this one will conclude also. It's helped to be able to gather perspective from the DNSSEC root deployment, including the shared data gathering and the operational coordination that ICANN, VeriSign, and the root server operators have been doing with that effort. There's actually been a great deal learned and a great deal that we can take into analysis and recommendation for the future there. A couple of the ICANN senior staff came to Anaheim to present the model that ICANN had commissioned on the numbers they're expecting with new GTLD rollout. How many applications, what kind of timelines, which has also been helpful in framing the technical and operational advice they need from RSAC. The agenda isn't yet set for the next meeting, but I expect the root scaling item and getting closure on it to be at the top of the list. The DNSSEC signed root zone will have just gone to production, so I expect some review and analysis on that, some sort of early after action reporting, along with, honestly, I hope some celebrating. And items I expect to report on from this meeting, part of what RSAC does is I report back, and part of what the items I expect to report on from this meeting include DNS cert and the SSR discussions that have been so lively and so informative this week. The final report from the, now that it's out, the final report from the board's working group on the RSAC review, and some initial discussion of plans that some of you may have heard in the IDN workshop for some testing around possible variant support for IDNs. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I return the floor.
Thank you, Suzanne. Are there questions of the RSAC? If not, thank you, Suzanne, again. We'll move to the SSAC, and a call on Dr. Crocker, the Chair of the Security and Stability Advisory Committee, to give that group's report. Steve.
Thank you very much. First of all, having listened attentively to each of these other reports, I thought we were working hard, but I am just blown away by the amount of work that all of the other committees and supporting activities, supporting organizations have done. I'm not sure how we're going to match all of that. It's been a very vigorous week, nonetheless. We've had three meetings: an internal meeting of the committee, a public meeting of the committee where we present reports, and then an extended, somewhat marathon DNSSEC session that ran Wednesday morning and early afternoon. And I'll say a bit more about that. Next slide, please. Who's got the... there we go. Thank you. Now I have to learn how to use a new piece of technology here. We've had a long-running focus within the Security Stability Advisory Committee on the general topic of protecting registrations and various specific aspects of that, what we've dealt with over time. I'm very, very pleased to see that the ALAC has also begun to devote an extensive amount of attention to that, and I think that this is a good thing. We have a work party on a registrant's guide to protecting domain name registration accounts. This is an attempt to coalesce experience gained from previous studies on name hijacking, on weaknesses in registrar systems and related matters. We've begun work on orphaned name servers. This is... sort of one of the ragged loose ends that come from a widely distributed system that operates over time, and sort of cleaning up around the edges there. We've been cooperating with other groups, participating in various working group meetings here in Brussels, the Internationalized Registration Working Group, the Zone File Access Advisory Group, and the High Security TLD Advisory Group. As Ray described earlier in the process of the reviews of the various components, ESSAC is in the late stages of that process as mandated by the bylaws. We've instituted internally most of the recommendations that came out of the review. There is one particular change that requires a action at the bylaw level, and later you will see a board action to post a small change to the bylaws, instituting 3-year terms for ESSAC members, and adding a little bit of process structure to us. In general, we've been reviewing internally our processes, tightening them up, expanding them, documenting them, and so forth, all part of the maturation process. Unlovely work, but necessary, and I'm very pleased that we're able to go through that process fairly smoothly. Suzanne has just covered the RSAC side of the root scaling study process. We're in a comparable position. Somewhat embarrassed that it's taking so long, trying to wrestle with the processes and watching the events unfold that are changing the ground as we move along. The introduction of signatures into the root zone has gone very smoothly. That's been very helpful, and equally, there's much greater clarity about the anticipated rate of change in terms of number of TLDs to be added. Along the way, one of the things that's become very clear is the sort of very simple and straightforward idea that the various parties who are involved in operations need to talk to each other, and that much of the mystery of all of this melts away with a little bit of communication. And then last and clearly not least, the DNSSEC activity has been dramatic, extensive, and will have enormous and far-reaching consequences. I was privileged to be a witness, an observer, I should say, not to use the wrong terms, and just observe the process of the key ceremony a week ago, I guess. Is that all it was? Seems like forever. An extremely well-orchestrated and well-executed process. There's another one coming in a couple of weeks in on the west coast of the United States, and then the route will go live on July 15th. It's been astonishing to see the quickening of the pace and the breadth of activity. Messages have been arriving even this morning about activities that I thought were going to be either never or a long time in coming, just popping up all over the place. So we're going to see a substantial change, not only in the tightening of the domain name system itself, which is important, but also the leveraging of that for other activities around the up and down the protocol stack and across multiple applications. The only other thing that I want to say, it's been a privilege working with all of the other components of ICANN and indeed with the entire community. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. I think your statement that DNSSEC was dramatic, extensive, of far-reaching consequences massively understates all of those things. It's an extraordinary event. And thank you for the personal leadership that you've always shown in this project, which very modestly you've downplayed in this report. Thank you for that. Other questions for Steve in relation to the SSAC report? I see none, so we move then, and if we can pass the controls to Wolfgang. And Wolfgang Kleinbechter is the chairman of the nominating committee. Good morning, Wolfgang.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Peter. Good morning, everybody. My report is rather brief because the main decisions which has to be made by the nomination committee will be taken after the end of this meeting. So what I have to report in with just two slides is our process. We have phased our process into three phases. The first phase was outreach. We were using conferences like the IGF in Sharm el-Sheikh in Geneva, the APICO in Kuala Lumpur, and other conferences, the Domain Pulse in Luzern and elsewhere to talk with potential candidates and to invite them to apply. We organized some special events, including event in Beijing to get more candidates from the Asian East Asian region, and we distributed a lot of information material in newsletters, blogs, and we had our own publication where we tried to get the information out to the broader public. In early April, we started with the evaluation. We had 82 candidates for the 7 positions we have to fill. We started with a track polling of all the 82 candidates. Then we had an external service provider, ONB, which interviewed candidates and tried to find out what are the specific skills of the candidate. We had an internal rating where each of the NOMCOM members, put their top 5 candidates so that we got a better picture of the capacities and the quality and the skills of the various candidates. And we did, where needed, also additional interviews via phone or face-to-face using various opportunities. So, and this phase has come now to an end, and we are moving immediately after this meeting here to a nice place outside of Brussels where all the NOMCOM members are jailed for 3 days, and at the end of Sunday, we hope that White Frog will come out from the chateau where we are sitting, and we will have 7 new members from the in the various committees of ICANN, including 3 new papas. Some observations from our process. We had 82 candidates, but only 4 women. I think we need, indeed, in the future, more applications from female candidates. And this is a call to all women in the room and to their friends. ICANN needs more the gender balance. And we have only 1 sitting female board member at the moment. And certainly we need more. Among the applications, there is the main interest in the board, which is understandable. But I think This demonstrates also that obviously, you know, something has to be done to explain better to the community that the most important policy development work is done in the councils. And also the at-large advisory committee has a growing importance in the architecture of ICANN. And in so far, you know, we have to do something to bring more transparency into interaction among the various ICANN bodies, and so that not all the interest is concentrated on the board positions. One third observation is that a key question also in the interviews and the discussions we had is the workload and the question of compensation. And to be frank, you know, we have to be very careful that at the end of the day, the ICANN board will not be a club of rich old men, because, you know, we have to attract young people. We have to think about ways, you know, how to compensate the workload for people who have to feed a family, are interested in ICANN, but, you know, cannot do all this in from a voluntary point of view. And the final thing is, you know, my experience, it's my fourth NOMCOM, the first thing as a chair. The NOMCOM is really a very interesting place. The composition is very interesting. It represents the whole community of ICANN. By the way, you know, it should be really noticed that the officers of ICANN are selected and elected by the constituencies themselves, because each constituency can send people to the nomination committee, and I really, you know, are very thankful that the various constituencies of ICANN take the nomination of the members in the nomination committee very seriously, because this is a very, very important task. And so we were happy we had four former board directors in the nomination committee, and this signals also that the community understands very well the meaning of the nomination committee. A special thank goes to Dredde and Olaf from the ICANN staff. They did a wonderful job, and without the staff support, I think the nomination committee, which is also based on voluntary work, could not have done the work the nomination committee has to do. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Wolfgang. The figures in relation to participation by women is extraordinary, particularly when you consider that the board has, thinking just about the board appointments, there's been a history of very good female contributions, thinking back to Esther Dyson or Tricia Drakes or Jerry Riongi or Susan Crawford or Linda Wilson. I mean, there's been very high quality. Do you have any sense of why at this time in our history we've suddenly got such a strange ratio in terms of the candidates?
No.
Is there a problem in the way we're obviously doing reach out? We've got a large number of people responding. Is there something in the nature of the outreach that is sending a signal that, you know, women need not apply?
I have no idea. So probably we create a study committee which would look deeper into the issue.
Okay, well, we'll be forming an all-male study committee to look at that. Seems to be.
Now you see the problem.
Yes. So I see Marilyn at the microphone. And so let's start with a question from Bruce, and then we'll come to the floor. Bruce.
Just a really quick question. What's the composition of the nominating committee itself in terms of gender diversity?
I think we have in the nomination committee, there are three women. So from out of 15 voting members. So, but it's up to the constituencies. I think the nomination committee takes the people they get from the constituencies. So, and really, this is an outcry to all the female members of the ICANN community to think about to apply for the various positions.
Okay, I see a formidable lineup of people at the microphone. Marilyn.
Thank you, Peter. My name is Marilyn Cade. I'm going to talk about three things. One, I'm going to talk about the individual efforts that I made to reach out to senior qualified women to ask them to stand, consider standing for a range of the positions, and I want to make a point here very clearly. The nominating committee is not solely about appointing people to the board, but my observation from the time I was on the nominating committee, and my observation continues to be, there is an undue focus on just the board and not sufficient focus on bringing in leaders in the rest of the supporting organizations to enable people to build the skills and the understanding and to groom themselves and to be mentored in order to then move into other positions of responsibility and accountability. And that is a very important point, because when you go to, in particular, I find when I go to women in other countries and in other cultures and I ask them to consider doing this, many of them say that they do not feel competent to take on a board seat, and they feel that they would need to start somewhere else. But we don't actually make a concerted effort to build. So point number one. Point number two, it is a barrier to recruit highly qualified candidates, male or female, without a baseline of reimbursement of some kind. I've spoken on that before, but it is an actual barrier, and I face it every time I go to someone and say, let me tell you about this fantastic organization, you can make a difference. And they say, wow, there's an opportunity cost of not doing my day job while I do that very worthwhile job. Back to the compensation point. Point number three. During the affirmation of commitments, accountability, and transparency review team, the GNSO policy counselors added a criteria that called for almost a quota of gender balance. Female members of my constituency objected to this and focused on the need for qualifications and capability. So let's be very careful that as we are trying to enhance gender diversity and geographic diversity, we must keep our eye on the ball and make sure that we give the organization the most highly qualified, most capable board members, while we also strengthen the process to bring more women into the process.
Thank you, Marilyn. Just very two quick answers. Number one is quality first, before all the other balance criteria comes. And the second reply is, we talked to some candidates who applied for the board and asked them whether they would be available also for other positions in the council, but in 99% the answer is no, just the board. That's why I flagged this. I think that's an important point to raise the level of recognition of the positions in the councils and the advisory committees.
Actions speak louder than words, and all of the promotional materials, whether they are words or actions, make it look like the only place to be to contribute to the leadership of this organization. And I'm not talking about the nominating committee. I am talking about all of us.
Marilyn, to close you down. Sorry, we're not going to get through the current speakers in the time frame. We have a board meeting scheduled to start very shortly, and we're yet to hear a very important report to come. So, Vanda.
Okay, just to alert that there is really an astute about the reducing of the number of women in ICT field as a whole, not only in the internet field or other around that. So I have this study I will provide for the audience and whatever. So it's just that, because it's quite important that it's starting our homes.
Thank you. Wanda, by the way, you are the very good example that from a board position you can move to an enlarged advisory committee and do a good work. I used your example to try to convince some of the board candidates.
I'm trying.
Thank you, Wanda. Yangam Lee from Korea.
Yes, thank you. And I realize that I am the third female, but I'm not here to speak on my behalf. I know that there were several finalists for some of the important positions that the nominating committee was considering, and I'm hoping that if they did not make it this time, that their application would still be valid and that they would be considered in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Lee. Can we come to this microphone? Thank you.
Fawad Bacho from Pakistan. AP Rallo, ALAC. Since I come from a developing part of the world and my recent experiences with ICANN Fellowship have taught me and given me many messages, I think the fellowship program is an important ingredient even for the outreach of the NOMCOM. Why? if you actually look into our regions, for example, in Pakistani ICT and telecom industry, there's a woman leading who's had it declared as a $2 billion industry. Now, these are certain examples. They have come to the ICANN, but there's been, for them, it's been hard to find ways to, like, you know, participate in the main constituencies and groups. So I think that, one, the fellowship program should have more increased gender participation. That's the first step. Second step, we do have extensive examples of women participating in the core industry issues in our countries. And those women should be encouraged to come forward, whether that's to be considered like, you know, have them participate in the core, observe the advisory committees and so forth. And then the third thing is that it is very necessary that we bring in as many women as possible from developing countries. There's a problem in our part of the world, for Asia I can say, that women would be reluctant to immediately just step in. Maybe they have to be taken through that process that we fellows also go through. For 10 months coming into a leadership role in one of the constituencies in ICANN has been a pretty overwhelming experience. But still, I think the same experience can work for many women of other regions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Dr. Williams.
Thank you. My name is Liz Williams. I wanted to just reiterate, having been on the nominating committee last year, and I fought the good fight for saying quality first, and it didn't matter what gender you happen to be, and I want to reiterate that, because I think it's a very, very important point. And there is nowhere in the ICANN bylaws that says we need to have gender diversity at all anywhere. One of the things that I do in another part of my life is I run a global online trading directory for women-owned and run enterprises. My members, and they're from all over the world, rely on the internet for their businesses because that's how they do business with each other wherever they are in the world. And one thing that I thought might be a helpful suggestion about engaging with more women is to put out a call to different elements of the community to say, we're looking for really highly qualified people. For example, yesterday I received an email from the Appointments Commission in the UK, I live in the UK, seeking women in leadership positions to do all kinds of other things. And I suggest, having been on the nominating committee, having been involved in the community for a long time, having been on the board of ALDA, where Cheryl and I were the only girls and it was really good fun, that there are different channels to do things. So I'm happy to take on an outreach role and to advise people. There's also perhaps another way of doing it. People are terrified of the commitment of time and the workload when they realize what they're getting into. And it's a justified terror. And I wonder if it's not a more sensible thing to do to invite a group of people to say, perhaps you want to just come in and learn and do a baby starter course in a way, to get more familiar with the issues, to get more familiar with the language and the way of doing business. And again, I'm very, very happy to help facilitate that because, again, I come back to the issue of quality. At the same time, I do recognise that effective boards and effective leadership organisations, it's been well proven that a gender diversity and a mix of different kinds of people does enable leadership groups to work better.
Thank you. And thank you very much for the offer of further help. Alan.
Alan Greenberg. As someone who's applied to the nominating committee twice, not for a board position, the statement of interest, the supporting documentation is all aimed at the board. It's a real strain to fill it out when you're trying to apply for one of the other positions. Just the name saying, we are looking for people for leadership. Well, if you've never been in the GNSO or the at-large or the CCNSO before, trying to frame yourself as saying, I now want to be a leader of the organization, don't work. If you want people to apply for these positions, create documentation and the FAQs and the statement and the request itself that are aimed at people applying for that. A one-size-fits-all ends up completely focusing on the board.
Thank you. It's a good point, but anyhow, if you are a member of the large advisory committee, you are in a leadership position.
Okay, let's move to the last on this topic, Rita.
Thanks, Peter. I thought I would weigh in as the only female voting board member currently to give some of my thoughts. I think I want to support what everyone has said here today. I do a lot of work with diversity at my law firm also, And the sad reality of the whole matter is that really successful women are, frankly, really busy. So even though it's improved and the statistics show that the amount of time men spend parenting has been on the rise and is actually quite significant now, women still have the majority of child rearing and household duties. So it's just really difficult to balance your job with the home life. And I think that's why I want to focus, as many people have said, on trying to deal with the board workload. I think that a lot of times there's just a standard, it's 20 to 30 hours a week, and that's what people are told coming in, which seems overwhelming. So I think we need to manage that expectation as well, and I think let people know that there's some flexibility there in terms of the time that you're going to be spending on a weekly basis. The other thing I'd like to do, and Wolfgang, I'm happy to talk to you about this, is I think we need to start doing some outreach. I agree that we need successful, talented people across the world, and I think that we need to start doing some outreach. If we're really only having four people apply, maybe we need to have an event sometime at these meetings to try to get women in, and I'm happy to offer my services to speak to them, to try to mentor them, and to try to get them to understand a little bit more about what the board requirements are. I do really like Marilyn's idea about mentoring. I think it is important. I always try to meet the women in the community as best I can, although you know we have a pretty busy schedule. But I am happy to avail myself of any ideas you might have to improve relationships with women and get women more interested in what we're doing. Thanks.
Thanks, Rita, and thanks also for that offer of help. So we've got lots of offers of help in lots of ways, Wolfgang. Hopefully the NomCom will be able to take that up. And obviously, if there's anything the board can do to help on this issue, just let me know. I'd like to close out there unless there's any further issue arising out of the Nominating Committee report. We seem to have focused on one, very important, but only one of the issues. If not, thank you, Wolfgang, very much, and good luck to the work of the Nominating Committee. We'll be watching with bated breath for that white smoke. We come then to the last, but by no means the least, of the reports for today from the Ombudsman. And I ask Frank, say good morning to Frank, and ask for the report from the Office of the Ombudsman.
Hello. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Being that you have a board meeting starting in 4 minutes, I'll simply say that my report has been online for several days with this session, and I'd be very happy to answer any questions that anyone would have.
Thanks, Frank. We will certainly postpone the meeting of the board to accommodate all of these other important reports. Are there any questions of the Ombudsman about the Ombudsman's report? Peter. I see none.
Peter.
Rob.
I do have a question for the Ombudsman from the remote participation community.
All right.
This was submitted before Frank took the stage. Will the ICANN board consider an independent evaluation with public input of the Ombudsman's performance?
The answer is that there's no current plan that the compensation committee, which supervises an aspect of the Ombudsman's performance, conducts a regular performance discussion with the Ombudsman and has on occasion taken outside advice in relation to standard industry review techniques. So there is no current plan, but in time the Compensation Committee may well return to that. Any other comments or questions of the Ombudsman? If not, then Frank, thank you for your report. Thank you for waiting until the end. Any other comments from any of the panellists, or can we close the session? I see none. Thank you all, ladies and gentlemen, for the reports from these very important organs of ICANN. We'll now take a short break of 5 minutes, during which I'd ask board members to come to the stage and take up a seat, and as soon as we're ready, we'll go. Thank you all.